From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, another fight is brewing over the social studies that young Texans are being taught. Will bad history repeat itself? And the story of the last days of Sam Houston. He was rejected by Texans, ejected from power, and living in exile. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The State Board of Education this year will be rewriting the social studies curriculum standards for Texas public schools. Curriculum standards outline what students are to learn in each course and grade. They provide an official uniform blueprint for what's expected to be taught in every public school classroom in the state. This directly impacts the 5.4 million Texas students, their quality of education, and their future in a world where education is the key to success. These standards are set by the State Board of Education, a 15-member elected body. Seven of the seats are up for election right now. And this year, the State Board will be revising social studies curriculum standards for Texas. The Texas Freedom Network, a left-leaning watchdog organization of the State Board of Education, released a report this week that points out the factually wrong information that the board inserted into the curriculum 8 years ago. That was the last time that the social studies curriculum was revised. Kathy Miller is the president of the Texas Freedom Network.
Well, 8 years ago, the Texas State Board of Education adopted curriculum standards for social studies classes, history and other social studies classes in Texas public schools. And in the course of that adoption, board members virtually cast aside months of work by educators and scholars making recommendations for those standards and instead made hundreds of changes inserting their own political agenda and personal beliefs. That is how we have gotten politics in the history and social studies classroom. Today, the Texas Freedom Network Education Fund released a report that details a number of the most egregious errors in those curriculum standards because the State Board of Education is this year reviewing those standards and making changes.
So this could be an opportunity to make corrections according to your view.
Absolutely. There are educators currently reviewing those standards to make recommendations. I believe that the State Board of Education has a huge responsibility in determining what our kids learn in their classrooms, and they should put our kids ahead of their politics and make sure that they learn facts, sound scholarship, and they're prepared to be great citizens of our country and our state.
So what are some of the things that you want to correct?
Well, in 2010, I'll be blunt, actually, what happened 8 years ago at the State Board of Education was a circus. And the State Board of Education played ringmaster. They made hundreds of revisions to the standards. They called slavery a side issue in the Civil War. They glorified so-called Confederate heroes. They suggested that civil rights have had negative consequences for our country. They implied that Joseph McCarthy's red baiting in the 1950s had been vindicated. They suggested that international treaties are anti-American, and they attacked the foundational principle that separation of church and state is a constitutional protection for religious liberty in our country. Those are just a few of the problems in the curriculum standards.
There was a report out recently by the Southern Poverty Law Center. It said that only 8% of high school seniors can identify slavery as the central cause of the Civil War. Do you think that's disconnected to this?
It is absolutely not disconnected from this. I mean, we have seen, especially in the last few years, we're in many ways in this country still fighting over the Civil War and its causes and its meanings for today. We've had the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville and debates across the country over Confederate monuments. That illustrates pretty clearly that the debate is continuing. I believe that 8 years ago, the Texas State Board of Education contributed to the problem by passing the social studies curriculum standards that distorted the history of the Civil War and that the primary role was slavery. Of course, we need to teach our children the truth about our past, even when it's not pretty. And our State Board of Education refused to acknowledge the role that slavery played in this country and continues to play today.
Well, what do you say to people who might say to you, Kathy Miller, of the Texas Freedom Network Education Fund. You don't want to take politics out of the classroom. You want to take out their politics and put in your politics.
Well, that is absolutely not true. I am not telling the State Board of Education what to do. I'm asking history scholars and educators what they think is most important for our students to learn in order to be prepared for college and jobs when they graduate and to be fully participating citizens of our country. That is the difference between putting politics into the classroom and listening to the experts about what should go in the classroom. I'm recommending the latter.
So we've had 8 years of this. We've had 8 years of the curriculum that you don't like. And
correct,
that's a long time. What are the results? I mean, do we have people walking around thinking that Moses wrote the Constitution?
Well, interestingly, the Texas Freedom Network Education Fund also works with students on college campuses across the state of Texas to try and engage them in our civic life and encourage their participation in voting. And what we hear from the students that we talk to at our colleges and universities is that they didn't get much instruction about the civil rights struggles, and they didn't get taught about slavery as a central role. And in fact, they were told that states' rights was the number one cause for the Civil War, which is really a made-up excuse to ignore the issue of slavery. So we actually are talking to students who have graduated under this curriculum, and they're frustrated when they go on to college and they learn that they weren't told the truth in their schools. And we are seeing these debates raging throughout our country, and the divisiveness in our country is in part contributed to by an education system that's politicized. Education isn't Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. It's about sound scholarship, and I think that's what our State Board of Education needs to focus on.
So we do have a system to try to come up with a curriculum that is free of politics. We have experts in history who carve out the curriculum, and they go to the State Board of Education, and they say, this is what we recommend, and then what happens?
Well, unfortunately, in the past, what has happened is that politicians on the state board, lawyers and a dentist and realtors, decide that they know better, and they take out, remove, or change parts of the curriculum that they don't like, that don't align with their worldview. In the last go-round in 2010, we saw board members doing cursory internet searches at their desk to try and come up with some kind of reasoning behind the changes they were recommending, and in many cases, actually insulting the experts that were telling them that what they were proposing was actually inaccurate. The board has a choice. They can behave the way they behaved in 2010. They made Texas a national laughingstock at the time, or they really can listen to the advice of the teams that are currently reviewing the standards and the experts that will be called in later to review those recommendations. That's a very clear choice in my mind, and as a parent of two children who graduated from Texas public schools, I think I can speak for many parents that it's a very clear choice in their minds as well.
So you want to see, we're going to do this again. It's time to check, take another look at our curriculum for public school social studies.
Correct.
What's different?
We actually have several new faces on the board and a new board chair. In the last curriculum revision over science, the board was much better about including topics like evolution and climate science. So I still hold out hope that this board, with moderate Republicans and Democrats working together to control the most extreme elements on the board, will remove the political propaganda that was inserted 8 years ago.
One thing they have in the curriculum now that you object to is that they portray opposition to the civil rights movement as coming from Southern Democrats, which
only Southern Democrats.
Only Southern Democrats. But, you know, Southern Democrats, they were opposed to civil rights at the time, because if you were a politician in the South in the 1960s, you were a Democrat.
Absolutely. I have no objection to honestly portraying the fact that Southern Democrats were opposed to much of the civil rights agenda. What I oppose is suggesting that only Southern Democrats were opposed to it, and ignoring the history of the struggles that folks engaged in order to obtain an expansion of civil rights in this country. This is, I mean, the civil rights movement in this country wasn't a moment of Southern Democrats voting against civil rights laws. It was decades and really a century of advocacy, and it's still not over. So what we're saying is not get rid of anything unflattering to Democrats. We're saying tell the truth.
Do you think that this massaging of the curriculum to put Democrats in bad light and try to elevate the Confederacy, is that all, you know, this is a part of a political agenda?
I think that there are members of the State Board of Education who know that dictating the content of what 5 million children in public schools learn from kindergarten through graduation and skewing it in a particular political direction can have a lasting impact on the political power in the state of Texas. So for some board members, I do believe they have an agenda behind what they're doing. For too many of the board members, they simply have not adopted rules that require them to pay attention to the experts and educators that are making recommendations. And if the State Board of Education can't get it right this time, then I think the legislature should take away their authority to make these decisions without that important input.
Kathy Miller is the president of the Texas Freedom Network, which released a report titled Get Politics Out of the Classrooms, which calls on the State Board of Education to listen to history experts when it decides on social studies curriculum. They're expected to vote on the revisions in November. Sam Houston was a larger-than-life figure who played no small role in the creation of the Texas that we know today. He was a powerful force in the fight for Texas independence against Mexico. He was the president during the Republic and a pillar in Texas state government. But when it came time for Houston to play his leadership role in Texas secession, the Confederacy, and the Civil War, Houston wouldn't do it. He walked away. Why? Why did Houston refuse to take the loyalty oath of the Confederacy? It's the central question of the book Exiled, The Last Days of Sam Houston. The author is Ron Roselle.
The most heroic part of his life for me, his greatest moral dilemma that I think he passed with flying colors, was refusing to take an oath of allegiance to the Confederacy at the very beginning of the Civil War, which cost him the governorship. It cost him pretty much his reputation and his standing. And he spent the last few years of his life literally in a self-imposed exile up in Huntsville.
When Houston came to Texas, people think that he may have been an agent of Andrew Jackson to try to bring about a successful secession from Mexico.
It is absolutely true that he carried on communication. He wrote constantly to Jackson. Whether or not that is literally true is debatable at best. Sam Houston came to Texas because he needed a new life. He needed a new start. He had that bad business in Washington. He had had that terrible business in Tennessee. And he'd had all of those drinking episodes in what was now Arkansas. And he needed to start fresh. But of course, by sending those to Andrew Jackson could read a map. And to a certain extent, he could see into the future. And so he would have certainly thought that his protege, almost he was almost like a surrogate father to Houston. And having such a person down here in that fire would be profitable to the United States in some way. There's no doubt in anybody's mind that what the settlers wanted was more freedoms under Mexico, and when they didn't see that, just freedom and to be left alone. But Sam Houston was absolutely a genius at juggling two things at one time. And he would have already, when Texas became a republic, he was already scheming for the quickest and the easiest way to gain admission as a state in the Union.
Sam Houston and the Runaway Scrape. They're running from Santa Ana. Some say that some members of this ragtag group just got fed up, and they're the ones that led the charge into San Jacinto and caught Santa Ana with his pants down and were able to beat him of this through sheer luck.
It's a legend, and then you know what? There may be something to it, because here's the thing. Sam Houston was always a taker of time. He would wait till the best opportunity, and after having thought it through, to do what he thought was best.
There was an individual, Mary Boo Lamar, who says he says that he's the person that led the Battle of San Jacinto against Sam Houston's orders, and then Sam Houston took credit for it. So we have Mary Boo Lamar was the second president of the Republic of Texas.
He was.
And so we have two people telling two different versions of an event for their own personal benefit.
To say that Mirabeau B. Lamar and Sam Houston were on unfriendly terms would be a great understatement. They did not care for each other at all. And there's nothing to take away from Lamar's bravery at Sam Houston. Even Sam Houston, everybody recorded that he fought valiantly. Their views on the American Indians separated them completely. Houston fought valiantly all his life for the rights of Indians, the inherent rights of the people that were native to this country, to be given the lands that they established and that they held for generations. And Lamar was for eradicating the Indians. He didn't just want to move them, he wanted to do away with them. But you know, that brings up the sticking point too of Sam Houston. Like any great hero, like the Greeks told us, every great hero has a flaw, and Sam Houston's flaw has to be the fact that he not only didn't rail against slavery, he condoned it.
He owned
as
slaves.
As an economic necessity in the economic infrastructure of the South, which of course it was. Now that's wrong, and it shouldn't have been. But the South, being a completely agrarian society, grew their cotton and grew their things, and that depended upon slavery. He treated his slaves well. He never mistreated his own people, and whether or not he freed his own slaves before he had to, that's debatable, because I've seen the actual will, and he still owned them on paper after his death. But the fact is that any of that, even if we could prove anything about him, about his treatment of his own slaves as being kind and merciful, that's an argument that only runs so far. They were still in bondage, and they still shouldn't have been. Dan Rather, another graduate of Sam Houston State University, in one of the prefaces of one of the books about Sam Houston's slave, said that it's hard to imagine how Houston got it when it came to the Indians and their rights, and didn't get it when it came to the African Americans in his own household. And I agree, and we'll never get it. It's one of the unexplained things.
And yet Sam Houston was a leading, full-throated voice against the secession and joining the Confederacy.
Oh, he was the leading voice against it. He made speeches all over, well, not all over the state, but all over the part of the state he could get to, on any stump he could crawl up on. And for years in the Congress of the United States, that we had to keep the Union together. It was the only way that the Union could stay afloat was to be together. He made forceful speeches, the most forceful maybe from the balcony of the Tremont Hotel in Galveston, where he looked straight at an angry mob and he said, "Let me tell you what's going to happen when you have this war. You are going to lose, and on top of that, you are going to lose your sons and your uncles and your fathers by the thousands. And at the end of it, you still will have lost." He was right.
In San Antonio, he gave a speech at San Pedro Springs, lasted 4 to 6 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
He gave speeches. He told people, do not join the Confederacy. If you're dead set on secession, go ahead, secede, but don't join the Confederacy. But they went ahead and they did it, and they threw him out of office because he refused to take that oath of allegiance to the Confederacy.
Absolutely.
And so he could have taken the oath and just not done anything, and he still would have enjoyed the reins of power. So he was able to take a moral stand against that, but not against slavery in and of itself.
That's exactly right. You know, he, even when he saw that it was going to happen, he begged the state, he begged the legislature, he begged the people, at least let's revert to a republic, but let's don't join these people. Let's don't do this. You're absolutely right about one thing. He could have simply taken the oath, and everybody kind of expected him to take the oath. But he saw an oath as a sacred thing. You know, it's
But he took an oath to Mexico before.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, he did. But he didn't respect Mexico. And that didn't have anything to do with his being a loyal citizen of the United States. And he would lie occasionally when he had to. But when it came to that moment, I think that the moment that defines Sam Houston for me is that night in the governor's mansion after the legislature, after they had seceded and run the Confederate flag up on the Capitol across the street in the governor's mansion. They made this little rule about the oath to the Confederacy. And they sent a fellow across the street to tell him, Governor, you will be expected to take this oath in the morning. And he had dinner with his family, and they did their Bible readings after that. He told her, I need to be left alone tonight. And she sat in a chair. They sent the children to bed, and she sat in a chair on the bottom floor. And he went upstairs, and I have actually walked that hallway in the upstairs of the governor's mansion just to see if I could feel a little bit of him there, all night long in his sock feet. The next morning at dawn, he came down. She had not slept a wink either, and he said, Margaret, I will never do it. And, of course, she didn't expect him to. And within a week, they were in Huntsville.
The day that Texas seceded from the Union is also the same day, Texas Independence Day.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Did that mean something to him?
I'm sure it did.
So Sam Houston is thrown out of office because he would not take the oath of loyalty to the Confederacy. He gets an offer from Abraham Lincoln that he will provide him troops to put down the Texas Rebellion. And what happened?
Maybe he got an offer from Texas. That's another one that goes back to Jeff Hamilton, which was the slave, who was our only person who would tell us that he tore up the letter and threw it in the fire and he also says that he told the three men that he had gathered together to give him advice. He said it was either 20 or 30 years younger, I would have accepted his offer.
There's a lot of records on the other side of that letter, though. Then, I mean, there would have been something from the Lincoln archive. Right.
Yeah, and all of the Lincoln biographers say it. Now, whether or not are they give credence to the fact that it happened, that the offer was made. Now, whether Sam Houston said that or not, we only have this one source to back it up. But I can tell you this, and this is something that people don't quite understand about Houston. He was not adamantly opposed to the war after Texas joined. Became part of the war. He felt Texas was his home. And he even made a statement one time that said, in times of difficulty, in times of war, a man's home is his country. And so his own son went to war and was almost killed in the war. And what he was opposed to was anything less than keeping the Union together. That was his life. That was his creed.
So Sam Houston, he's now been out of office. He's in the Civil War is on, and he is relegated back to Huntsville. And where does he see his place?
Well, he wasn't really relegated. He chose to go back to Huntsville. He went to a couple of places. He owned several properties. And he went first to Independence near Brenham. and he owned a property there. And then he moved on to a place down on Galveston Bay that's not even there anymore. It's underwater now. And then he moved back to after the Battle of Galveston, after the North took Galveston during the war, he decided to move his family up to back up to Huntsville, where they had lived happily for many years. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. Sam Houston, at the time of the beginning of the Civil War, or during the first part of the Civil War, his only income, he never cared much about making money. He was a great steward of public funds when he was in the Congress and when he was the governor. When he became, I'll give you an example. When he became the third president of the Republic after, you know, he was the president first and then Lamar and then Houston again, he had to clean up a big financial mess that Lamar had created.
He wrecked the currency.
Oh, yeah, he did. He certainly did. And Sam Houston was, even though he had some people against him, he pretty much fixed that. But in his own household, Margaret had to watch the purse strings, because if he saw something he liked, he would just buy it. And so at the very end of his life, right before they came back to Huntsville, the only money being made by the Houston household was selling cordwood on Galveston Island. They would ship it down from this property he had. His slaves would bring it down from the property he had across Galveston Bay and sell it for firewood in Galveston. And that was it. When it came time for them to go back, they couldn't buy the house that they had owned before, because his reputation had been 10 years before that. He could have bought anything in Huntsville he wanted just on the strength of his signature. Now nobody would loan him money. He finally rented, I don't know if you've seen the Steamboat House in Huntsville. It's intact and it's in the park. It's an odd folly of a house, and he rented that, and that's the house he would die in. But he went back, and basically he did nothing. I compare him throughout the book several times to Ulysses. Ulysses, who had all of these amazing adventures, some good, some bad, through his life. And then, as an old man, came back, and everybody expected him just to sit and look out at the ocean. But then he had the hardest battle of all, and I think that's what happened to Houston. He came back and refused to take that oath and fought the legislature tooth and nail on everything, and then finally was deposed and went back to Huntsville. By that time, his health was failing, and he died there. Very few people came to his funeral. He had many, many friends in Washington that respected him. In all probability, because of the federal blockade and because of the war, they wouldn't have known of his death till after the war, which would have been 2 years after his death.
Ron Rozelle is the author of the book Exiled, The Last Days of Sam Houston. It's published by Texas A&M University Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also comment on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us wherever you get those podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.